Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 369. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are Guillaume Veillette.
Hello.
Hello, sir. Mr. John Lindemann.
The pleasure is all mine.
As always. And James Jones.
I'm very happy about the quality of these socks, as it is quite cold.
You should write a... James, you should write a 10,000-word blog about your socks.
My socks are amazing. They're so warm.
Are they improving your quality of life?
They're improving my quality of feet.
That makes no sense. All right,
so... No, it didn't. We have an action-packed episode for you guys today, a very weird selection of new business coming up, and a little bit later we're going to get into a lot more of your listener mails. We only did two last week, and there's some really good questions in there, so look forward to it, please. First up, let's go to James with a Wii U game that I didn't think we would ever get to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, so that's part of the reason I bought it. So I have this week to talk about Tekken Tag Tournament 2 Wii U Edition, which is a hell of a name. There are many nouns in that name. So I bought this along with the Need for Speed game together with the intention of bringing some third-party conversations onto this podcast. And I felt like this game was particularly appropriate, as it's gotten a lot of praise as being the best version of the game.
Sure.
It is a genre we almost never talk about, fighting games. And it is a genre that very rarely makes its appearance on Nintendo consoles anyway. So, that's how we ended up here. With that in mind, I haven't had a ton of time to play it. I'm only about 3-ish hours into the game so far. The problem that I've got with the game's controls, and I didn't want to go straight to problems, but I will say, it feels like the game is kind of sluggish, and I don't have a lot of experience with the Tekken franchise. I've played other Namco fighters, especially ones like Soul Calibur, and they feel faster. Now, I understand, and I'm going to get hate mail from somebody out there because fighting game communities are nuts, but it is my understanding that the general perception of games like Soul Calibur is that that particular game is much more button mash friendly. That it's you know, real fast, just slam on buttons and crazy things happen and you'll be successful.
It's for the casuals.
I didn't want to say that. Because I understand that there is such a thing as high level Soul Calibur play.
Absolutely. There's...
And that those people are nuts.
Yeah, I mean, you can... Yeah.
Tekken, whatever. Obviously, the biggest difference between it and Soul Calibur is that you don't have weapons. I mean, really, Soul Calibur is features weapons prominently, whereas Tekken very much features much more down-to-earth hand-to-hand combat, which means everything is very, very close up. All combat's real tight, you know.
It's zoomed in.
And the characters have to be real close, because otherwise, I mean, your arm's only so long.
I'm just surprised that you would make that distinction. I guess I've never heard that before, and most of my Tekken experience comes from the original Tekken Tag Tournament on PS2, which a friend had in college back when we lived in the dorms. And he mostly used it to play bowling.
Yeah.
Because Tekken has weird mini games.
Weird shit in this game. Which I want to get to.
I'm sure. But I remember that when we actually did the fighting, I was always interested in using the ridiculous characters like the panda and dragon dude and whatever. But,
The robot made of wood.
The devil. But he was really into using this guy. I think his name was Eddie, and he was kind of a break dancer,
And a little too close to a stereotype, but it's okay because it's Japan.
I wouldn't say it's okay, but
like not
Japan.
Okay, but like you're like all right.
Yeah, this guy could invert from. He's kind of like Uncle Sensei in Dive Kick, in that he can fight both on his hands and on his feet. Yeah. And but I remember this character, my friend in the dorms. He would do a lot of tapping, and there is certainly a certain rhythm to playing as him.
Yeah.
And if you can kind of tap on the buttons in a certain rhythm, you can make him do really cool things, even if you don't really know what you're doing.
So,
and he was almost impossible to beat. Of course, the rest of us playing him didn't know what the hell we were doing either. I mean, none of us like studied Tekken. None of us really tried to get really technically good at it. But just in friendly games, that character seemed very button mashy to me.
The feeling I get from this game is that high-level play of this game is probably really, really high-level fighting game. And you don't normally associate this series with the high-level fighting games. You know, that's normally stuff you put in the Virtual Fighter category. But it's not like Street Fighter where there's, you know, six or seven special moves that you can just memorize. These characters have upwards of 100 combo button presses that trigger specific sets of attacks. So there's a lot of things to learn, and you can stumble across a lot of these combos just naturally, but there's these ones that are chained together in certain ways that make it really effective, and there's lots of modes to help you learn them. And just like the 3DS Tekken game, was a Tekken game on 3DS, wasn't there?
I think so, yeah.
I want to say
that
it was.
It came with the movie, yeah.
Yeah, it has these quick selects on the touchscreen, which is helpful, but it's actually not that useful because a lot of times you end up screwing up because you got distracted, essentially. It's like learning these combos has been really successful for me because I'm able to turn them back against enemies. But at the same time, you know, if I try to deploy them too much, I leave myself open. And because it's so close, there's a lot of just moving slightly out of the way of attacks. It feels very frenetic, and I feel like two people playing this game who are both really good at it would be very entertaining to watch. I'm just beating up on the really hapless computer, and it's not that entertaining. I would say the first time playing the game, I went through the arcade mode without losing a single round, which is not
on the default difficulty.
On the default, yes.
Wow.
Now, is there a story mode?
There is not really. The arcade mode is pretty much there's an opening movie.
Depends on how you define story, John.
Yeah, well.
Even less than normal Tekken standards. There's an opening movie that
plays
really? Every time.
That's too bad because Tekken is sort of renowned for the completely ludicrous movies that you get for beating the game of different characters.
Well, so you do get ridiculous videos at the end. So all there is the opening video where they explain that there is a tournament, and then the video at the end where you're playing as a Japanese schoolgirl who shows up in the middle of a gang fight and says, "Boys, boys, don't fight." And then they both get the shit kicked out of them because they look at her boobs as they jiggle. That video goes on for like 8.5 minutes. It's nuts. It's completely gratuitous to the point of...
Sounds like they got what they deserve.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It is really funny to watch, but it is really long and really stupid and beautiful and amazing. It's not a hard pivot from where I've been with the Yakuza series for the last couple of weeks, but what I'm a little surprised about the game is just how much it feels like to get really good at this game, you'd have to spend a lot of time with it because there's so much of the game that's just outwardly so silly. So one of the things you can get in the game is you can unlock items that are essentially like hats that these characters wear, and they don't actually do anything, but the Wii U version has some Mario-themed stuff in it. So I was fighting in a tournament, and one of the characters, I want to say his name is Jack. He's a Cheetah Man. Not the Cheetah Man, but a Cheetah Man. And he comes out with what appeared to be a pot shaped like a green pipe and a piranha plant sticking out of it on his head. It was just there, and it didn't really do anything, but it was there the whole fight. So as I'm beating the living crap out of him, it's kind of bouncing around on top of his head. It was very peculiar. The mini games in the game, which Johnny has alluded to, are bonkers. There's a volleyball style game where a large ball floats down from the sky, and then you're trying to hit it at your opponent and not let it touch the ground on your side, or you lose health. You can power up the ball by hitting it hard, and it hurts your opponent if it hits them. And this goes on for a really long time while they're yelling at each other, like fighting things, and really insane music in the background. It's like a duet is playing with really cheesy lyrics about a high school couple talking about how they're going to be together forever. It's bizarre. There's a Mario mode in this game, which is weirdly fleshed out, where mushrooms show up randomly on the stage. Poison mushrooms, regular mushrooms, golden mushrooms, and the super mushroom. The one that turns you gigantic.
Sure.
And if you get the big mushrooms, if you get regular mushrooms, you get bigger. If you get the super mushrooms, you get enormous. If you get poison mushrooms, you get smaller. And if you get the gold mushroom, you basically become God. It's just a regular fighting game with the exception of these things spawning. It's weird.
Weird.
It's so weird. And Mario's, and the theme of World 1-1 plays in the background the whole time. It's bizarre.
Now, is there a Mario background for it, or is it just the normal backgrounds?
No, it's a regular background.
That's really weird.
It's super weird. This game is so strange. I don't, like, I'm having fun with it, but at the same time, I just feel like I'm not getting to the heart of the matter. Like, I understand that, you know, Soul Calibur, for example, is a much easier pick-up-and-play game. I've played some Virtual Fighter. I'm not good at it, but I'm convinced there's about 5 people on Earth who are good at Virtual Fighter.
Pretty much.
It's just taken me a while to sort of get my handle on it. I could beat the AI, but I don't feel like I'm playing at a good level. I feel like the AI is just bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, isn't this game online? Can you...
It is online. I have not gone online yet because, I just feel like I'm not getting it. I'm worried when I go online I'm just going to get soul punched.
Well, that probably will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to a point where I feel comfortable enough to attempt an online match. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that I'm going to be able to get there with the AI.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like with fighting games, it would be a lot easier if you had like a buddy who was really good, who could kind of show you the ropes. And especially when you're fighting other people, a lot of it would be like, well, you see, when you play people online, they're going to be doing this. They're going to do a lot of this, so you're going to see that. Whereas you really would go online and you wouldn't know what to expect, so you would just get on there and you'd probably just get creamed. Which I think it's a problem for all of these kinds of games, and I think that's...
It is. It makes the barrier of entry incredibly high.
Yeah, because you really don't get trained well.
The old Samurai Showdown games were notorious for being impossible to get into.
Yeah, like there's just such a curve, such a high curve to try to climb to get into these things.
Yeah.
You know, that's why their audience is so small.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a... It's enjoyable to a point. And I could button mash through the AI up through a point, but it feels like when I try to play at a higher level, I try to get these combos and piece them together, I'm just missing on something. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm executing the combo incorrectly, I'm missing, and the AI is taking the opportunity to just beat the living crap out of me. It doesn't take a lot to knock somebody out in this game, because the idea is you tag out when your health is low and sort of recover.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple hits and the match is over and you're down.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's tough. It's really difficult.
I mean, that was even like with the training mode in Street Fighter 4. I would get to a point where, you know, I would learn a certain number of moves, but then I would kind of hit a wall where there was a certain move where I just could not, you know, and I was even playing with like a proper fighting stick. I could not do things the right way, and the game could not show me how to do it properly, like actually input the move correctly for me to actually do it.
Yeah, there are a remarkable number of things the game gives you to try to help you with that. Mm-hmm. There is the training mode, which is the enemy more or less stands there and lets you beat the crap out of them.
Yep.
But then you can go into the move list, at which point I realized there was 103 for this character and went, oh my god.
That's like Street Fighter 2, yeah.
And you can select them and watch the AI do the button inputs and watch the action on screen. And a lot of them are timing based. So it's not just hammer through all the keys real quickly and it and the combo goes. It's you hit and then you hit again right as the impact. You press the next button right as the impact happens. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a special move. It's a combo, but it's a combo that does a ton of damage. Mm-hmm. And getting in through one attack lets you do the next.
Yep.
So it's hard to both manage mentally this list of moves in your head and make sure you get all the timing perfect. And considering all they have to do is hit one button and they just roundhouse kicked you back into the wall, you know, it's hard to sort of balance the impulse to play high level play versus the fact that the AI really only needs to kick you 4 times and you're done. Mm-hmm. I will say the game looks amazing. I mean, it looks really, really good. The stages are bright, colorful. There's lights and effects going on. You can smash your way through a lot of them. The characters look really, really good and really, really stupid at the same time, which is what the series does. It's fun. I'm a little disappointed that it's taken me some time to get into, but I understand that's par for the course. Hope they'll be able to get into it a little bit as I approach it. You know, it's been a while since I did a proper fighting game, so I can give myself time to sort of figure it out as I go.
Now, do they do anything with the gamepad in particular?
You know, video plays on it when they're doing video. Like I said, during fights, it'll have like a quick combo. You press it, just does all the button presses for you.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we don't really. There's not a whole lot.
Yeah.
It's probably not ideal to play it with the gamepad, but the game does offer a million control options, so there's probably something that works pretty well.
Yep.
It's a pretty good deal if you're interested. I mean, I didn't buy it on sale. I just bought it at regular price. I think I paid like $15 for it. Hmm. I mean, yeah, it's pretty cheap.
Well, it's a year old, more than a year old.
So I'll put some more time in with it. If I've got more thoughts on it next week, I'll throw them out there. But of course, Bravery Default is coming out, so I might go to the 24-hour Walmart after we finish and just buy it.
You're a sick man, James.
It's fine.
Yeah, I will probably be downloading it myself over the eShop very shortly. So, Guillaume is up next with new business. And, Guy, were you going to talk about the Wii U or the 3DS version?
Oh, this is on Wii U. I just got Scribble Nuts Unlimited. And
that's the first Wii U game, correct?
It is, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, but I was looking forward to this game dropping in price on the eShop. I remember kind of wanting it at launch. And when I saw that it was $30 on Steam and $60 on Wii U, I was like, you know what? I can wait. I feel like a chump. I'd feel like a chump paying $60 for it. Just as a quick aside, Nintendo really needs to learn the difference between a sale and a price drop, because I think this is a price drop. I think this is like permanently now $20 on the eShop. But they've got they call it price drops on their eShop, and they're actually temporary sales. So
it's my understanding in Europe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, European listeners, is that there's just a banner that says under 20 euros, and sales end up in there and price drops end up in there.
Huh. Yeah, but apparently I think that's a new thing. I think it's Don who said that on Twitter. It's a new thing, but they used to say sales or price drop as well.
Yeah, which is going to make things even more confusing.
Yeah, I don't like it. But Scribblenuts Unlimited. This is my first Scribblenuts game, and I'm really enjoying it. I feel like it's really at home on the TV screen, because I can see this game feeling a little bit, you know, like, I don't know. I think that the most fun thing about it is just, you know, being able to show how clever you are for solving something in a different way, you know. And that's a little bit tougher to do on the handheld, where you'd have to pass the DS or tell someone, oh yeah, I summoned this tuna sandwich and it ate the cat or something. You know, like it's just not something
that
you can do.
As it is want to do.
Yeah, well, but yeah, so I'm really enjoying the game. I'm sure I'm the last person on Earth who's played one of these games, but basically you solve these puzzles, you have these different characters that you talk to, and they all have some sort of need. And you've got this magic notebook, which can create anything that you want. And so, you know, you just try to summon the item that they need to solve their problem. And you can come up with very different solutions, you know. Like, well, first there was this girl who was sad that her cat was up in a tree. So, yeah, I made tuna appear, and the cat wouldn't come down. So I made the tuna smelly. And still, you know, no effect. And I was still learning the game. I wasn't sure exactly what everything did. So I just threw the tuna at the cat, which then attacked me savagely. And but then quickly went to its master. And I had solved the puzzle, but not before making a flying salmon, which I rode around just for good measure. that's really where the fun is in this game. Like the crazy crap that can happen that you don't expect, it can just be hilarious, you know. Like you find a bully, someone wants you to get rid of a bully for them. So, I summoned a therapist and the bully just ran out screaming. So, you know, like puzzle solved, you know. And or someone wants to put something up a flagpole, so the girlfriend put underpants on there, and that worked. So there's, you know, like, basically, you could go the boring route and, you know, get a flag for the flagpole, or you could chop the tree down, I suppose, although the cat would also be pissed off at that, I'm sure. But that's just not that interesting. So on a Wii U, because you can show, you know, what you're doing to a group of friends, and sometimes like the results are really, I don't know. Sometimes it's a little bit disappointing because you would expect a solution to work, but the way that, they deal with these things in the game doesn't really, like, it won't behave like you expect. But sometimes it still gives good, like, funny results, you know? Like, it's a little bit frustrating when you type five different things that you're sure is going to solve this problem and none of them work. But still, there's the occasional time when someone wants to teach a dog new tricks. So you make the dog smart and a graduate cap appears on the dog, but, you know, nothing else changes. Like, that's kind of unexpected, and it's pretty funny the first time. Or there was this fireman truck, this fire truck that needed some sort of audio, you know, like an alarm, to make it more like a functioning fire truck. So I gave it a ridiculous stereo, and a boombox with a funny hat appeared. So I just, you know, like, I'm still in discovery mode like that, and, you know, it's just fun to see how the game will interpret what you want it to do, but. No, definitely. I'm having a lot of fun with it. And for, you know, for $20, I think people should probably check it out.
So, you know, Scribblenauts has been around for a few years, and there's, you know, several different versions of it. The series, the sense of humor seems like right up your alley, Guy, and I'm wondering why you haven't tried the series before now.
I think that I was listening to podcasts at that time, and I was reading reviews, and all the people who gave it glowing previews at E3 were just so down on the game once they actually got it that really turned me off. I was like, well, I'm not sure I want to play this. Like, maybe I'm just going to wait for the sequel. And then the sequel was improved, but people were still kind of like, eh. So yeah, I stayed away for a long time because of that. And I still feel like it's you know, it's a good starting point here. It's not like I've missed anything. I can do all the same things that people could do in the previous games. And it's just like the optimal so far version of this game. So definitely check it out.
Mr. John Lindemann, what have you been playing this week?
All right, I'm still trying to wrap up Link Between Worlds. Dude, just somebody tell me where the hell to get the Pegasus boots. Just, I'm just going to go to an FAQ file anyways. I'm just, I'm in this, the dungeon, this, the sixth one. The hell is it called?
Well, it's all relative.
Yeah, it's kind of non-linear. Well,
the sixth one that I've done, I'm in the like Lost Woods one or whatever. Top
oh,
left of the
yeah,
map.
Yeah, yeah, the one with the Wall Master.
Yes, the Wall Master that I just want to kill because it's so annoying. Oh my god! I mean, I thought it was annoying in the old games, but this one really takes the cake. And you know, the thing is, I hadn't even considered because. First, I figured out that you can kind of hurt him by just dragging him over something that he'll run into. But it never occurred to me that I could actually use that to solve puzzles down the line. And so what happened was I couldn't figure out, you know, I walked into a room and I was like, how the hell do I do this? And I actually, by accident, got him to do something for me. And then I was like, oh my god, of course, right. Because, you know, in the old games, he couldn't do anything for you. There was nothing. He was just another enemy that you would just kill, and you know he was there more to annoy you than anything else, but he didn't really have any purpose outside of just annoying you for the most part. But yeah, I really like that. That was pretty cool, and I was like, oh, all right, so you use him to slam down and stuff. Okay, that's cool. So I would anticipate I'll be beating that soon. I just haven't had a lot of time to play this week. But yeah, I will get the Pegasus boots because those guys. Now, the one thing I did do, I actually did find Mother my or whatever her name is, and I did upgrade most of my stuff. I upgraded the bombs, upgraded the arrows, upgraded the hookshot, and one other thing. Those are the ones that were the ones that I thought that probably were the most worthwhile to upgrade because I use them all the time, no matter where I am. So. I don't know if there's anything else that I should upgrade or anything else that comes in later on. Like the fire rod, I didn't really think it was probably worthwhile. Kind of does, you know, does the same thing a lot of the time. You know, the puzzles are the same that it solves, at least. So, but it's good. So I'm planning to probably get that one done, the Lost Woods one. I'm going to get that done probably this weekend. I think I'll be able to wrap it up. The only other thing I haven't done that's kind of annoying me is I have two master ores, but I have not upgraded my sword. And I know that you have to go to like the blacksmith or something to do that, but I've done that, right. I think, in both the light and the dark world, and they didn't send me on any quests or anything like that. I didn't get any.
Well, the thing is, you need two. Maybe you went there when you only had one.
Yeah.
And first, I think you go to the light world and then the dark world. Like, okay. They both can do one upgrade.
Okay. Yeah. I know, because I went into the blacksmith like fairly early on, and he said, well, you know, if you have ore, I can upgrade your sword. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's something you probably get later on. And then, you know, I did eventually get one ore, but then I came back and I don't think I got upgraded. I don't think I did it right. I think I was playing the game wrong. So, but yeah, I'm hoping to wrap it up this weekend. So that's it.
All right. So this week I tried something kind of new. I've been wanting for a while to figure out how to get my DualShock 4 to work with my computer, my Surface Pro, because there's a bunch of Steam games that I could play on the thing, but I don't want to play with a touchpad on the keyboard or something like that. Yeah. I really wanted a gamepad, but I don't have I don't have an Xbox 360 anymore. I don't have an Xbox controller anymore. And the DualShock 4 is a great controller, but it doesn't really natively work with Windows. It kind of works, but not really. So I'd heard on another podcast, and I'm sorry, I don't remember which one it was, but someone was mentioning that there's a really good, like homebrew kind of fan made it, or it's actually not a driver. It's a wrapper that tricks your computer into thinking that your PlayStation controller is an Xbox controller.
I think there are similar techniques to get a Wii U Pro controller to, pick up on the Bluetooth of a computer.
Interesting. The Wii U Pro controller would be a good backup, actually. I have one of those, and I do like it quite a bit, but I still think the DualShock 4 is the best controller. It's the best one that I have. So I did find that thing. I just did a Google search and found it, and it was a little bit tricky to set up, but nothing major. It's kind of typical doing anything on a PC. It takes a little while to get it going. But yeah, once I got that up and running, I thought I should play a game from my backlog that I really haven't played at all yet, and something that the RFN listeners might find interesting. So I booted up a game called The Swapper, and this is an indie game that came out last year, and I picked it up in a Steam sale. I probably paid very little for it. I don't remember exactly what, but I'd heard really good things about it, and the main reason I was interested is because I'd heard it compared to Metroid. And when you hear that, I always wonder what that really means. And in this case, I think it's worth explaining just how it does compare to Metroid. So The Swapper is a puzzle platformer game. And in terms of the mechanics, in terms of the way you solve puzzles, it's probably the closest comparison would be something like Portal. So it's like a 2D version of Portal. But it is much darker and moodier. It has a very kind of dark atmosphere. In fact, you have a flashlight, and the environments are oftentimes pretty dark. Sometimes the more interior environments can be better lit and a little more friendly looking. But a lot of times you're running around in caves, and it's very atmospheric. And that's really where the Metroid comparisons start and end. So it's really all about the graphics and the sound design. Very, very Metroid. It's kind of like vaguely creepy and very lonely feeling. Has an incredibly beautiful piano score. And, the graphics are very interesting because they do this, thing. They use kind of, it's almost like claymation. So it's a little bit like Donkey Kong Country on Super Nintendo, or I don't know if you guys ever played like an old LucasArts PC mm-hmm. game called The Neverhood, which is this beautiful claymation, mm-hmm. Rendered, like pre-rendered claymation, animation, and, just really, really pretty. And in this game, I would not have expected that from this game, because like I said, it is very kind of, brooding. Style to the game. And I think the low lighting, like the darkness of the game, it actually helps make that stuff look less like clay and more like real surfaces, you know, like you're really in that environment. So every now and then you'll play through like an area and you'll be like, oh yeah, that thing's made of clay and that thing's definitely like a toy model that they took high res photos of, you know, and they put it in the game. But a lot of the areas, you really forget that it's done that way because of the lighting and because of the way that they use this stuff. It's really, really well done. And the whole thing gives the game like a really cool look to it. And in a style that I certainly wasn't expecting. So I think the Swapper looks really nice. It sounds amazing. The controls aren't great, but it's really not a platformer. It's more of a puzzle game. And like I said, it plays a little bit like Portal or maybe like Abe's Odyssey. If you guys have ever played those Oddworld games. It has a little bit of that feel to it, yeah. And the main mechanic of the game is like within the first 5 minutes, you get all the ability. I don't think you really get more abilities later in the game. So it's really not like Metroid in any kind of structural way. But early in the game, you get these abilities. You can, using the L button, L1, you can point a cursor across the room and make a clone of yourself over there. So in the early parts of the game, you use that to like, hey, there's a switch up above. I can't get up to it. That's okay. I'll shine my flashlight over there. I'll hold down L1 and I'll make a clone of myself above that switch. And then he will stand there on the switch. And when you make a clone, they move along with you. So they don't have a flashlight. So it's fairly easy to tell which one you're controlling because your main guy, the one who you have embodied, has the flashlight and has a little bit of a different look to him, I guess. But everyone else moves in sync with you. So you can make up to four other clones of yourself. So I think there can be five representations of your character on the screen at the same time. And you can arrange them in such ways that as you move around, they will fall off of ledges or they will jump up to other ledges as you jump. And so it gets really complicated trying to kind of coordinate and orchestrate all of these different clones of yourself. And then the other wrinkle is that using the R button, you can point at a clone and swap into him. So now you've inhabited one of your clones and left your former body behind, and now it's kind of a dummy, right? So now you are in control of a different one, and so that affects when you can activate switches or pick up items or create new clones. So it might be a little bit complicated sounding. It makes a lot more sense when you play the game. And one of the things I learned early on that really surprised me is that you can use this cloning and swapping mechanic to do some really weird teleportation stuff, including like getting across very large gaps or going up really tall vertical shafts by with a vertical shaft, for instance, you would point upward and create a clone way above and then immediately swap into it. And then as soon as you do that, you basically pause or slow down time while you're making a new clone. So the game, like, you can see it visibly slow way down, which is good because the clone that you just swapped into is falling because you made him appear in midair. But while you're falling and time is slowed down, you can point upward again and make yet another clone way up above. So you can do all kinds of weird things like that to get around. And the game actually has a nice, some kind of like, in-game commentary on like what this might mean for the guy that you left behind who you're no longer in control of, because he's made of you and that was your body previously, but now it's not anymore. So what, I don't know if you guys have ever seen like that Michael Keaton movie Multiplicity, but I think it definitely asks some of the same questions like, wait, which one of us is the original here? And does that even mean anything anymore? It's a very, very interesting game. It has some really clever puzzles, and I think it is primarily a puzzle game. It's like the puzzles are kind of built around, at least they're built around spatial reasoning. So if I say platformer, it's not really an action game in any way. It's more that, the way you solve puzzles is by stepping on things or jumping on things or climbing on things or pushing blocks around, and that's all on top of these weird cloning and teleporting mechanics. But I love the atmosphere of it. And if you're someone like James who doesn't like the backtracking parts of Metroid, or if you're not as interested in the upgrade sequence where your character just gets stronger and stronger and stronger throughout the game, there's no combat in the Swapper. So if any of those things turn you off of the Metroid franchise, I would say you might want to check this out because it retains a lot of the atmosphere and the tone of Metroid, but the gameplay is really very, very different. And I think it's awesome. I mean, I just was playing this thinking, this would be, I don't know why this isn't already on a console, because obviously I'm playing it with a controller with my DualShock 4. Mm-hmm. And it plays great. You just, you know, you control the character with one joystick and you aim the flashlight and the swapper gun with the other one. So it works really well that way. It certainly doesn't need to be played on a PC, but I think that's the only platform it's available on right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if the swapper gets announced for, you know, Wii U, PS4, Vita, stuff like that later in the year. But if you have a computer, it doesn't take a whole lot of processing power to run it. I mean, I'm playing it on my Surface Pro, so it's really not a big resource hog, and I think it's awesome. And you can probably pick it up for $10. It's really nice.
Sweet.
Yeah, you guys should check it out. But the other thing I wanted to talk about for new business, and this is really getting a little bit off the reservation, but I started watching an anime series this week, which I don't do very often at all. I'm really not a big anime fan, but I'd heard a lot from our friend Danny Bivens on the Famicast about a show called Attack on Titan. And I'd also heard that it is out on Netflix Instant now. So it's very, very easy to watch, very accessible for those of us in the United States. And I thought, you know, it sounds cool. I knew there was a 3DS game already in Japan based on it. So I thought, maybe this would be something I would like. And I started watching it. I'm like 8 or 9 episodes into it now, and I'm really addicted, and I'm really, really excited to see what happens next. I think it's a really awesome, like, action anime series, and like a little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of fantasy, I guess. It has maybe more steampunk might be the aesthetic that would best describe it. But it's very violent and it's very dark. The themes of the story are pretty serious. And there's a pretty interesting kind of mythology background to the story that is, as kind of typical for anime, they don't really explain it to you very well up front, but it takes a little while. Like, it takes a few episodes before they start to fill in all the holes of, like, what is really going on here and why are things this way? How does this stuff really work? But they do explain it. The series is very easy to get into, and it's very, very cool. I'm enjoying it more than any anime I've seen since probably Dragon Ball Z, although that's much sillier than Attack on Titan. But I wanted to recommend it to people just because I think it's really cool, but also because there are a couple of games already out that are based on Attack on Titan, and I would bet you there are more to come. And
it's been a huge hit in Japan.
Yeah, and I have a feeling this is going to be pretty big in America too, especially being on Netflix. That's such a huge platform, and I feel like there's not a ton of anime on Netflix, so it sticks out a little bit in that way.
There's a decent amount. It rotates a lot. They have their own section.
Okay. It's not something I go out looking for very often. But this was an exception just because I'd heard so many good things about it, and it really is great. There's a 3DS version out in Japan already, and it's made by Spike Chunsoft, which are not the greatest developers. I don't think they're the cream of the crop.
They have a skill set that is their own, and when they deviate from said skill set, things get
yeah,
weird.
I wanted to hear James chime in on this one.
Hey, no, they were heavily involved in the 999 and related games.
Okay.
And those are good games, but again, they work inside their skill set.
I mean, they also make the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games.
Yeah, those are outside their skill set.
They've been making those games since the Super Famicom days.
That doesn't mean they're good at it.
Well, they're at least experienced. But yeah, so I don't think they're really the cream of the crop in Japanese developers, but they have an okay reputation at least. And you know, Danny reviewed this game on our website, so you can definitely go read more about the Attack on Titan 3DS game. He liked it. I think he was surprised by it. I think it's better than he expected. Not amazing, it sounds like.
Right.
But, I think that was the general reaction to that game, was that it was like, oh, this isn't shit.
Right.
Right.
And that's
cool. It's a licensed game, so you might be forgiven for having low expectations, but it sounds like it's pretty good. I watched some videos of it, actually on my Wii U gamepad. I went on YouTube and watched some videos of it, and it looks awesome. I mean, it just has a great look to it. It moves super fast, has really fluid animations. And it, just if you haven't seen anything on Attack on Titan, the action scenes are a lot like Spider-Man with swords. So you've got these characters who are like, they have these, like steam-powered or gas-powered grapple hooks, like belted onto them. And they just, they shoot out and attach to buildings or trees or whatever is around them. And they pull them up into the air and they swing around. And it's very Spider-Man looking, really, really cool. Like very dynamic, high motion, really fast moving kind of scenes. And I thought the 3DS game really like captured that sense of speed and that sense of motion really nicely. And it also does like the characters look really good. I thought the Titan, the enemies, these giants who look like they look like humans wearing no clothes and with really disturbingly blasé facial expressions. They kind of walk around with this kind of like dumb grins or just kind of blank stares. And then when they see people, they pick them up and eat them. It's really disturbing. It's a big part of the appeal of the show, I think, is the Titans are just really freaky looking because they're so human-like, but they're just different enough that it really bothers you when you see them. And I think the 3DS game captured that really nicely. So I just looked at that and I kept thinking, you know what? This seems like the kind of thing that a company like XSEED might pick up and release as kind of a niche 3DS game for people who are into the anime series. And especially if the series picks up and becomes popular in America, I could definitely see that happening. The other game is not for a Nintendo platform, but it's a fan-made game on computer. And it's worth looking up some videos of this because it's just really strange looking. It's just called Attack on Titan Tribute Game. And all the characters are super deformed, which I think is a poor choice, and it looks really bad. And the game is, it's very much a PC game. Like you have a cursor that you're moving around and you're basically like clicking on the environment where you want to grapple onto, and then it will pull you up there, but it doesn't have the visual effects to really convey a sense of speed or anything. So the game is this cool, it's a cool idea in that it's cooperative. So you log on online with other people and you're all supposed to be working together as a team in order to take down these Titans who are roaming around in the environments. And it's a cool idea. And I know that Ty Sugert talked about it on Famicast and said that he played it and he thought it was pretty fun, but I think it looks really bad. So it made me appreciate the 3DS game a lot in that the 3DS game really captures the feel of the show. Like the show is very exciting to watch. The action scenes are just really fast and really cool looking. And I think they conveyed that really well in the 3DS game, and the tribute game on PC did not have the same effect, but you know, it's a fan game. So I don't want to be too critical of it. You can go and play it for free if you want to. Whereas the 3DS game isn't even available in the West right now. But I really do have a feeling it will be at some point.
The 3DS game is a D0 rating. Like, that's the 17+.
Huh.
Oh, wow.
Damn. Really? Wow.
Yeah. I saw it was a D. I'm like, wait, what?
I wonder why.
Which means it has the black label. Well, I mean, I just watched a video of it. It's gory as hell.
Oh, dude. The anime series is brutal.
Well,
like, yeah, the player being bitten off of people. It's
well, the
rough.
Player in the trailer screwed up and got caught mid-flight and just got thrown right into the thing's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And just saw a blood cloud come out. So yeah, it's a little violent.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So there's not anything really quite like it on 3DS, and I would love to see that come over, but we'll see.
Just import it. Oh.
Yeah, you can't. Unfortunately, 3DS is region locked, so that won't work. All right, so that is going to wrap up new business for us. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have your listener mail.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up, we have impressions for Shovel Knight by Michael Burns for the 3DS. There was a big eShop event, and we got to play a bunch of upcoming titles. Michael bypasses discussion of Shovel Knight gameplay and instead focuses on the important facts of the game. Dr. Morovian Fusion... Hey, that's hard to say. Dr. Morovian fusion of propellers. Propellers. It's extra hard to say when you don't speak English. Dr. Morovian fusion of propellers and Radis.
Next up, we have impressions for Treasure Knots on 3DS by Neil Ronahan. Let's get this out of the way. No more giant enemy crab jokes. I mean, good lord, it's been like 7 years. There has been an entire console generation since that thing. Anyway, Renegade Kid's next 3DS eShop game is the exploration slash 2D platforming slash co-op supported game. Not supported. Modern jokes. And we have impressions for Moon Chronicles, another Renegade Kid game on 3DS by Michael Burns. The other Renegade Kid demo at the eShop event this past week was a remake of their technically impressive Moon for DS. It looks good. It sounds nice. Go see impressions of what a first-person shooter on 3DS can be like. DLC remakes of games from last generation. Next gen is here.
There we go.
All right, and we got impressions for Aben Hawkins and the 1001 Spikes for 3DS by our own Neil Ronahan, the beloved Neil Ronahan. There's nothing like a party chock full of meat. Super meat. Distracting meat aside, Aben Hawkins is a brutal platformer on the 3DS eShop that opens the door for four players. Super meaty players, apparently. Just imagine the trolling opportunities in a game where the deaths are massively unfair. And we have a feature, Nintendo's third pillar, how Nintendo plans to improve your quality of life by the beloved James Jones.
Oh, God.
Everything you wanted to know about the new quality of life and a whole lot more. About 5,000 words more, actually, all in one place.
Last this week, we have a review, Beyblade Evolution 3DS by Don Koopman. Beyblade is anime kids fighting with magical tops. That's it. This, the 400th Beyblade video game, is a top battle game, and they're still making them like 30 years later. Only you can stop Beyblade.
Alright, so go read about Beyblade and third pillars and thousands of spikes and meat parties and moon. And moon and treasure knots and crabs over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone. We all survived. Now playing. And now we can move on to listener mail. And James is going to read the first email.
Sure. Billy from Philly writes, good morning, RFN crew. It's evening. But anyway. One, I'm a huge Legend of Zelda fan, but ironically enough, have never played Link to the Past.
That's not ironic. That's tragic.
I don't really think it classifies as a tragedy either. It's just...
it's disappointing.
All right, anyway! I recently purchased Link Between Worlds and want to know if I should play Link to the Past first or dive right into Link Between Worlds and play the classic later. You want to stop and answer this before we move on to part two?
Sure. I think it does not matter the order. Whichever one you play second will be easier. But if you like one, you will love the other.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of old school. I'd play Link to the Past first, personally. But, you know, just because I think you probably kind of appreciate Link Between Worlds more that way,
and you can
I
get,
think.
If you have a Wii U, you can get Link to the Past for $8 now.
Exactly.
Yep. Anyway. Play that on the gamepad.
I don't know. Just make sure that you do play it eventually because it is still a classic. There's a reason why it still pops up, you know, at the top of top 100 games of all time. And that's because mm-hmm. everyone who makes these lists are the same age as us. But also
it's
beyond that,
it's
still a very, very good, very, very playable game even today.
Nostalgia yeah. shades.
It's brilliant.
Fuck it, I don't care. Play whenever you want. It's fine.
You just expect the game to be a tad more difficult than the remake. Not the remake, but the sequel. It can be kind of a bastard at times. But now with the fact that on the Wii U, you've got the save states, I think that can alleviate a lot of the frustration of having to, collect four more fairies to give the last dungeon another go or things like that.
I encourage you to post every single puzzle on the whatever they call it, the plaza.
Sure.
The Miiverse. The Miiverse.
Every single puzzle, even if you know the answer immediately, then go, how do I solve, please?
Why can't Link crawl?
How do I shot web?
For every single puzzle. All of them.
How do I make Metroid jump?
Yeah.
How do I fix problems?
No, really. I think if you played Link Between Worlds first, you would find Link to the Past a lot easier than if you did if you reverse the order. I think whichever one you play first will be harder, and the second will be easier because they do have a lot in common, and there's a lot of a lot of shared puzzle design, a lot of shared world design. But you should play both. I don't know that I would play them back to back because they are very similar.
Yeah,
like I might put some time in between. And in that case, I would say play Link to the Past first, because maybe you'll find a deal on Link Between Worlds if you wait 6 months. Probably not, but you might.
Other suggestion, go play Minish Cap instead. All right, moving on to part two.
You should play Minish Cap as well.
Two. Yep. I've beaten Ocarina of Time about 15 to 20. Good God, about 15 to 20 times.
That's a lot.
And recently completed it on the 3DS. Now I'm working on a mirror-imaged Master Quest, and I'm blown away by how different the world feels being flipped. It's basically a brand new game in my eyes.
Oh, your eyes are very cloudy.
My question is, how difficult is it for them to flip entire worlds in a 3D Zelda game? Mainly Skyward Swords and Wind Waker, since Twilight Princess is already with the GameCube and Wii versions, and release them as DLC, etc., to enhance the experience even more to people like me who have beaten them multiple times. I would say really what you're experiencing isn't the fact that the world's flipped. It's the weird shit they throw into Master Quest. Because they throw some goofy stuff in there.
I had forgotten that they flipped the world in Master Quest.
They did. Master Quest wasn't flipped, though, on the GameCube disc, was it?
Was it? I don't really remember. I mean, all I remember is that the dungeons are different, even though they have a lot of the same kinds of puzzles. And, you know, they look the same. Like, they have the same art, but the layouts are different. And I just remember when I played the Master Quest on GameCube thinking, it's not different enough for me to want to play through this entire game again.
I just remember the cows embedded in the wall in Jabu Jabu's belly.
Yes, that's weird. But the story, I mean, you still have to play through the story stuff, and it's exactly the same. And for me, it's like, you know, I like the dungeons, but, you know, the dungeons are definitely less than half of that game. And if everything else is basically the same, to me, it's not remixed enough to make it worth playing through the whole thing again.
I mean, from a
obviously, Billy from Philly disagrees, and that's great.
He's played it 20 times as well.
Any tiny change would be significant if you've played the game that many times.
So yeah. I would say that on a technical standpoint, it's probably not exceedingly difficult. There's probably some kinds of weird bugs you'd introduce, like animations flipping out or something.
Yeah, but the programming is relatively easy, but the testing would be significant.
You'd have to completely retest the game because you're going to run into some goofy shit that happens because stuff got flipped.
Right. Mm-hmm. So even the way that Nintendo did it with flipping absolutely everything, like flipping the textures, now everything is written backwards. If you can read Hylian, which I definitely can't, like making Link right-handed instead of left-handed, like doesn't that basically solve everything?
No, because you may still have some situation where somebody wrote an animation script and it says explicitly, like, go left to a certain degree. You wouldn't be unless you went and changed every animation script explicitly. I mean, you could still miss something where he ends up sitting in the air next to his horse while his horse rides or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there would certainly be things that were just shortcuts that people would take just because they knew that.
They said, oh, it's character. Not like he's ever going to be holding this thing in his right hand.
Exactly.
Now he is.
Which is really where you would see bugs.
I think if it was that easy to do on Wind Waker, they would have done it in the HD version.
Yeah, I just don't think they want to do the extra testing that they would need to do. That's really what it comes down to. I don't think it's overly difficult. I think it would be more on the testing end than on the actual implementation end.
Well, also, and no offense to Billy, but I think you're probably in the extreme minority of people who would really appreciate that for the amount of work that they would have to put into it. Mm. I think I'm a big Zelda fan, but I don't care about mirror mode. And I think most people are probably but I'll never really play through it.
I would like to just see remixed dungeons because I enjoyed that with the Master Quest. Maybe they weren't remixed enough, but if you said, oh, you can get remixed dungeons of, Wind Waker, I'd be like, oh yeah, cool. Perfect. I'm signed up. Just because I enjoy how that game has its dungeons.
And that wouldn't be that much work because there aren't any dungeons in that game.
No, there aren't quite enough of dungeons in that game.
Skyward Sword, I think, who's to say? You know, obviously, it'll be a long time before
we've had a lot of discussions about Skyward Sword's dungeons on this show.
I think it'll be a long time before they re-release that game in any fashion. And I think there are a lot of other things that I would prefer for them to focus on before they start adding, you know, a mirror mode to that game. I'd like for them to tighten up the quest a little bit.
Yeah, that game had some issues.
I mean, I think what they did with Wind Waker to tighten up the pacing and to make that thing flow better was really great.
How
about
we get rid of...
I would love for them to do that same treatment to Skyward Sword, but I'm not in a hurry because it hasn't been that long since I played Skyward Sword, so give it another 5 years.
Let's put it this way. I like the Triforce hunt and found the fish hunting in Skyward Sword to be the most insufferable shit ever. So there's that. Yeah. I don't want to talk about
that. The fish hunting?
The one where you have to like swim through the levels because they filled it with these note fish.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
I mean that's like 15 minutes of the game, but sure.
It is insufferable beyond 15 minutes. We spent like 35 minutes talking about it on the episode we recorded about that game.
I think you're exaggerating, but yes. It's not the best part of the game. It's one of the worst parts of the game. Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's not flipping everything left to right, but I think there are clearly from Wind Waker we've seen there are other ways to make these games worth going back to. And, I actually think Twilight Princess would be a good one because it wasn't, you know, because it was a late GameCube game, early Wii game. I think there's probably a lot visually they could do with a new platform to tighten that game up.
Yeah.
I don't think Twilight Princess has aged nearly as well as Wind Waker graphically. So I think it'd be nice to see them go back and really polish that up and make it look a little more modern, a little more timeless. Where Skyward Sword, I think, has probably, you know, in a lot of ways does hold up in a similar way to Wind Waker just because it has a much more, realistic art style.
It's also a Wii game versus a GameCube game, to be clear.
Yeah. There's not a huge difference in
there. I mean, there's a discernible difference.
There are for sure. Yeah. it's in widescreen, which helps.
Yeah.
I think Skyward Sword, I mean, I've seen like PC emulated videos of Skyward Sword where they run up the resolution on it and it looks damn good. And I could definitely see that happening at some point, but
Not right now.
To me, that seems like something that might come at the very end of the Wii U, you know, and
yeah,
that would be the best time because you still have Motion Plus capability.
It's too recent. About. And they just did one.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got to release a new Zelda first.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, please.
Yeah. Well, they did two Zelda remakes in 2 years.
Yeah.
So
that shit needs to stop.
Yeah. It's a bit too much.
Well, it's not gonna stop. They both sold over a million copies. So they're good financial sense.
Well, I don't mean like stopping. I just mean it needs to stop until they release a real new game.
Yep. Oh, I agree. And I think there's also diminishing returns. And I think
absolutely.
The reason Ocarina and Wind Waker did really well in terms of sales and those remakes is because those games were really popular to begin with. Skyward Sword, it would not be as successful. If they did Twilight Princess, if they did Majora's Mask, it would not be as successful.
The phrase I used at the beginning of this email, nostalgia glasses, makes a big difference for those games.
Because
people remember them fondly from their childhood.
Yep.
Rolling on.
Or from my adulthood.
Zelda's awesome.
Or from John's senior citizen home.
I believe Guillaume has the next email.
I do. Jason writes. Shut up.
That one.
Jason writes, what can Nintendo do to fix third-party relationships so they're at or near the level or where Sony and Microsoft are with them?
Fucking nothing! Sorry,
yeah.
Wait.
What? I don't know. Where to start with this one?
I refuse to believe that it's impossible. I just think Nintendo is not interested in doing the things
here's the thing, and this is one of those things that pisses me off when I see analysts who don't know what the fuck they're talking about get posted in, like, the Wall Street Journal.
Hmm.
You can't just say, oh, Nintendo needs to fix our relationship with third parties. Third parties aren't there because people aren't there. It's so third parties won't go to your platform until you have people owning your platform, and not having third parties hurts the sales of your platform.
Mm-hmm.
It is a vicious cycle. So there's no magic solution to get the whole situation fixed. Pretty much the only thing Nintendo can really do to entice third parties to release games to their platform are bribes. I don't necessarily mean money hats. I may mean waiving, like, significant portions of the fee to publish games on Nintendo consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you say, okay, if you do a Wii game, we'll give you a big old cut on two or three 3DS games. It's the kinds of deals that make it more economically advantageous to release a game on the Wii U.
Well, that's the thing. They have to do something to
The best they can do.
To remove the risk. I mean, really, these companies are afraid of spending a ton of money, you know, creating a game and then putting it out there to die. That's what they're afraid of.
Sure.
And that will probably happen.
Waving around money is a very case-by-case solution. It's not a systemic solution.
No, you couldn't afford for it to be, because then you lose the economic proposition that makes running a console valuable.
Yeah, and for these companies too, there's also opportunity costs as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be effective in the short term, and I think the time to do it has passed for Wii U. It's passed for 3DS. The time to do it is early in the launch, and that's mm-hmm. why you see a lot of times the big third party exclusives tend to be early in a console cycle. That's the time to do it, because you want to show third parties that people are ready and willing to buy their games on your new system. And so you set up an exclusive or, you know, you get the best version like Sony did with Assassin's Creed 4. You know, they made it very clear that, hey, if you want to play the best version of this, our system is the place to do it. You only have to wait 2 weeks before you get the opportunity. So it's not that big of a deal. And preferably you don't have to wait any weeks, of course. But, you know, Nintendo waving around, well, we have the best version of Batman Arkham City, which they probably didn't. You know, I don't think the Armored Edition is even the best version of that. But certainly a year later, nobody cares, dude.
Yeah, right.
So you have to have something that's relevant, something that it has a wide appeal, something that is has a really strong differentiation. Either it's exclusive, or the version you're offering is obviously better and obviously different than what people can get on other consoles. But, you know, 2 years into the system's life, it's really too late for that to be effective, because at this point, you know, you're not gonna show other third parties that, hey, this is working, just by having one game that they know you paid for. So it's like Resident Evil 4 being on GameCube did not make all the third parties rush out to buy to make GameCube games in 2005.
No.
It became a one-off. Oh, paid for this game. Yeah. Well, best they can do is manage the relationships they still have through coming up with these kinds of deals that make economic sense for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe you're still working, maybe your relationship's still good with, I don't even know.
Maybe Warner Brothers or something like that.
Yeah, and maybe you say, all right.
it's not.
I think that's the biggest problem is, like, you know, people are like, well, third parties are never really that great on Nintendo platforms, but they're way worse on Wii U than they've ever been. And
they're
really
bad.
On 3DS, they're especially, like, American third parties are horribly – I mean, they're just pretty much non-existent on 3DS. And that's a fairly successful platform. So Nintendo has serious issues with – I think not only their relationships with these companies, but also the incentives. You know, I mean, I think people look at 3DS and they say, well, it costs way more to make a 3DS game than it does an iPhone game. And I can make not as good of a game on iPhone, but I can still make money. The risk is a lot lower. So,
I can be EA and be a complete douchebag.
Yeah, EA is not interested in making games anymore. They're interested in make you pay or wait a day to dig one square of your dungeon or whatever
it is.
No,
they're interested in making you only give 5-star reviews.
Or pay for a game that's not finished, Battlefield 4.
Yeah, it just feels like the Western companies just don't have the teams anymore or don't have any interest in making handheld games.
Yeah,
they don't. Well, I mean, you have... you have the independent sure. publisher. I mean, those are development companies. They're independently publishing on digital distribution platforms.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there and some of those are around on 3DS,
but the major commercial publishers are not in the game at the moment. Mm-hmm. Well, it's different.
I think part of it is that handheld moderately budgeted handheld games of the kind that we want on 3DS and even on Vita are kind of in the middle ground between ultra cheap and ultra expensive, and the Western publishers just don't work on that middle ground at all.
Even on consoles,
they're not interested in that
anymore.
Right?
Everybody that used to has been shut down.
Either shut down, or their resources have been funneled into making one or two games a year that are so expensive that they can't focus on anything else.
Here's a great example. Ubisoft, for whatever reason, felt the need to make an exclusive HD Assassin's Creed game for Vita, a platform that has sold 8 units. And it fucking bombed, because guess what? That's not a very popular platform, and it turns out an Assassin's Creed game made just for Vita is probably not very good. Hmm. They ended up having to release it for PS3 just to sort of try to make money on it.
It's not out yet, but I bet you it'll do all right. And actually, Konami's doing the same thing with Mirror of Fate, the 3DS Castlevania game. Mm-hmm. They came out almost a year ago now and bombed on 3DS, of course. And so they've been working on – I don't think it's out yet, but they've been working on a download version of that Mirror of Fate HD for 360 and PS3 as well.
Yep.
And I think that'll probably do all right for them, you know, because the price point is much easier to swallow.
But here's the thing. So
that's a $40 game on 3DS, or at least it was. So they go out and sell it for $15, and they say, hey, this is the new version. We tweaked it. We made it easier. We made it prettier. You can download it. And that's a lot more appealing to people.
Right. But in the case of, like, the Assassin's Creed game on the PS3, it looks like a Vita game that got upscaled. So it's like, well, you spent a ton of money making this game, hoping to sell it at a high value, but now you're having to sell it as a download-only PS3 game for less than half the original ask.
I'll buy it for a low price.
it's a section of the market that is really soft if you don't have a good game.
Hmm. Yeah.
And in Japan, it seems much more willingness to make those games, probably because of the distribution of the platform in those markets. But even then, a lot of those companies in Japan aren't great right now. Capcom isn't, you know, they're not dying, but they're not doing great. You have some companies that are reorging. You have some companies that just don't exist anymore. Marvelous. The Rune Factory people. I can't remember the company they were now.
Neverland?
Yeah, okay.
Or at least a division thereof.
They went under.
You know, I think it really comes down to the fact that, you know, Nintendo sells 3DS games because that is their core business and that's their identity. And when people buy a 3DS, they expect to buy a lot of Nintendo games. They don't necessarily expect to buy those other games. And so it's not that other companies can't make and sell really good 3DS games, but I don't think they know how to all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Nintendo really understands how to help them do it. You know, I mean, like if you look back at GDC a couple years ago when Iwata gave the keynote, he said, you know, our focus is on making sure that we keep prices of these games high enough that companies can actually make money on them. And I don't think that strategy worked at all for Nintendo or any of their partners on a platform like 3DS. So I think they really need to go back to the drawing board. But on the console side with Wii U, the number one reason I believe that there aren't a lot of third parties making Wii U games, in fact, there are about to be virtually none, because I think companies like Ubisoft and Activision are bailing out. I don't think Call of Duty will come out on Wii U this year. In fact, I would bet money against it. It sold 100 copies of Ghost. So I think the main reason is that it requires significant development resources to make a Wii U version, and they don't see the benefit of doing so. So it's a combination of two things. Yes, the install base is low. Yes, the interest level is low among people who actually own the platform. Now, that's stuff Nintendo can fix, okay? Mm-hmm. But what they can't fix is it's a hardware middle ground. So it doesn't have the same architecture as either a 360 or a PS3, even though it's similar in power. Uh-huh. So you have to take teams and teach them to make Wii U games even though it's more difficult and it works in a different way. It has different constraints. It doesn't have as fast a RAM as those other systems. You have to devote resources to putting in gamepad features and figuring out how to support all these different controllers and motion control and off TV support. And all that stuff costs money. And the companies would be willing to do it if they felt they could actually get a return on it. So right now you've basically the third party support for Wii U is being pulled away in two different directions for two very different reasons. And Nintendo can do, you know, Nintendo thinks they can make it better by just selling more systems, but that's not going to change the problem that companies don't want to take the time and effort to make a Wii U version. And, yeah. and Nintendo really hasn't made it easy enough for them to do so. And I think the, you know, I don't know the complete veracity of these reports about Nintendo and their initial meetings with third parties and everything. But I think it's very clear that the way Nintendo designs consoles is they do whatever the fuck they want. And then they go tell third parties that the system does this and it doesn't do that and please make a game for it. And what they don't do is what Sony did with PS4 this time, which they went around and asked everyone all over the world, what would you like in a system? What would make it easier for you to make games for this? What would lower your development costs? What would make you excited to support this platform? And they designed the system around that. And yes, that makes the PS4 kind of a generic, like the way it works on the inside is kind of generic. And so, you know, that can be its own problem. And I don't want Nintendo to give away their creative authority in designing a platform, but I think they need to be much, much better listeners when they're talking to third parties.
Well, that's the thing. They have to realize that they need to find some sort of middle ground where they don't create a console that is entirely just for what they want to do, period. I mean, they have to figure out some of these third parties. They have to say, okay, well, there's some Nintendo stuff tacked on there that we are going to use as much as we can, but there's plenty of stuff in there for you too so that you can do whatever the heck you want. And the Wii U was supposed to be
they made a system that their own developers wanted.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the way they've used it so far, I don't even really see the enthusiasm from Nintendo's first party teams that they were really all that excited about, you know, taking advantage of Wii U.
Yeah. It's a weird middle ground in the wrong direction.
I think it's an issue of, you know, maybe the hardware people don't talk to the software people as much as they used to. Or there was some kind of miscommunication or something weird going on.
Well,
with the
I mean, they did reorg their hardware R&D division
just last year. After the fact. Yeah, I believe they're aware of these issues.
Yeah, that may be reflective of that. So they had two hardware R&D divisions, a handheld and a console division, and now they've just got one. And I guess the operational theory – I mean, granted, there's still going to be teams within those working on different projects. But the operational theory here is that, A, they can leverage what the other is doing more directly. Mm-hmm. And, B, they can manage relationships a little bit easier. But
yeah. I mean, Iwata's been talking about unified architectures, unified network platforms, things like that. That all sounds really good to me.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is everybody else was starting on that 7 years ago.
Well, yes, I mean, to an extent. I mean, Microsoft doesn't have anything to unify except for the fact they make everything look like Metro.
Yeah, but they're going towards
except
that.
Except fucking Windows.
I mean,
Windows 8.1.
Well, I mean, but they're gonna have a common architecture eventually across every device out there, so
I don't know.
Whether or not you like it, that's, you know, whether or not
Microsoft doesn't make every device though. I mean, they only make a very tiny subset of the devices that run their platform.
Well, I'm just saying though. I'm talking about like their platform overall. They're going to be running the same. It's going to be the same kernel. But whatever. That's going way off reservation. But my point is, like Nintendo is kind of hopping on. Like it's like or Apple with iOS. iOS is the same no matter what Apple device you're on, roughly speaking. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo is kind of going towards that. But the problem is, everybody else is already there.
That's part of it, yeah. But I think it's also that, you know, if you look at the stuff Nintendo's doing with Unity now, with the independent scene, it's really smart. And I wish they had started it before Wii U came out and not after.
Yeah.
But I think it will pay dividends eventually. You know, indie games are made by small teams. They're difficult to accelerate. A lot of times you hear about them way, way, way in advance of when they actually come out.
Right, because indie developers talk like...
And but also, they need support. They need venture capital. Right. They need publishing deals. So they advertise themselves very early.
Look at this
fucking
image I drew in MS Paint.
But that's
gonna be a great game.
That stuff will come out, and a lot of that will still come to Wii U because they might as well. And I think that will be there will be kind of a like midlife resurgence for Wii U based on some of that indie stuff that we have heard about, but it still hasn't come out yet. But Nintendo needs to do similar things with the big companies. So we know that they support CryEngine 3, like the new Sonic game that was announced this week is being done on CryEngine 3. I think there have been a couple other games as well. But, you know, I don't know where the Unreal Engine 3 stuff is on Wii U. I don't even know if it supports that. I know it won't support Unreal Engine 4, which may or may not become a standard. But
wasn't the Arkham Asylum, you know, isn't that running on a...
Yes, you're right. Yes, but it has trouble running it.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, it doesn't run great. So they need to make sure that the tools that developers are accustomed to using work on the system. And Nintendo also needs to make sure that the tools needed to make the system do the unique things that really sets it apart from other consoles. They need to make sure that stuff is extra really easy for developers to take advantage of and that they want to use that so that they don't have to spend months and months and months trying to get something like off TV play working. And instead they can spend that time and energy thinking about what else can we do with the gamepad.
And it's not just the tools, it's also the processes, right? I mean, like the you hear, what was it, like when they announced their Unity initiative, there were Japanese developers that looked at that and they were like, oh shit, we gotta get on that. And then they try to access the website, the developer website, and they got a message like, oh, this is only for North America. And Nintendo was staying very silent about what was going to happen for, you know, Japanese developers.
Well, because it was being run at NST, and NST is in America, didn't have anybody to run this thing in Japan.
Right. So they got to make that smoother. You know, you can't have you can't have, you know, like delayed communications because it takes 2 weeks for the translators to get the question and its answer back and forth. You know, like it needs to be snappier. It needs to be like a smoother process.
Like, if it was any other company, I would just think NST went off the reservation and did its own thing. But I know if that had happened, there would have been a bloodbath. And the whole team would have been liquidated. But it just felt like NST was like, fuck it, we got Unity running. Look at this car. You want to make your game in freaking just HTML5? Look at this. It works.
It's definitely the right idea. I think they need to expand on that.
And she goes, oh my God, what are you doing?
And no major publisher is going to make a game in Unity.
No, of course not.
It's a great thing for the independent scene, for the eShop games. It's wonderful. But they need to do the same kind of thing on a different scale for the larger companies and make it easy for them to make these games. And you know, I think that's an area where Microsoft has a huge advantage, just because they've been involved with PC gaming for such a long time and they know how to work with a wide variety of developers and get those tools out there. I mean, they invented DirectX, which has been the standard code base for a lot of developers for decades now. You know, Sony had a lot of issues with this with PS3, and it really caused them very intense problems the first couple of years. And eventually, they got better. Eventually, I think the tools improved a lot. And then with PS4, it's just a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
They just started over from scratch and said, look, we screwed up last time. We're going to do way better this time. And we really need that level of mea culpa from Nintendo to say, you know what, third parties, we know why you don't want to make games for our systems. And we listened. We spent many, many, many months talking to you about it. We took copious notes. We went back to the drawing board and we fixed it. And I don't know if it's possible to do all that on Wii U because the system is really underpowered. You know, when you hear things like Nintendo went around to third parties and told them that the driving design principle behind the system is they want to be low power. If I'm a developer, I don't give a shit how much power this system takes. I care about how much power does it have? What can I do with it?
Now, when I hear stuff like that, I wonder what is driving Nintendo to do that? Is that something for Japan specifically? Because over here in the West, you wouldn't give a crap about that. No one cares about power, how much power.
Right. I think it is like a small home consideration. They want it to be quiet, but the Wii U's not that quiet. Especially if you have a disc in there, the disc drive is insanely loud. Yeah. So it's a lot better if you're playing an eShop game, but it's not that quiet. And I don't even think it's that low power. I mean, considering that, you know, the controller has a huge backlit touchscreen on it, the whole thing, you know, it sucks up plenty of juice. So I hear things like that and I wonder what the hell are they thinking? Why would that be? That's like a secondary or tertiary concern when you're designing a system like that. And I don't understand why that would be like the number one thing that you're really trying to optimize, you know?
Yeah, I don't know either.
When the Wii was coming out and we heard that Nintendo was so concerned about the size of the console. And we're all thinking, who cares how big it is? You know, nobody cares.
Japan cares.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's what I'm thinking.
I think the people who own Nintendo care in Japan, but do the consumers care? I'm not so sure about that. You know, PS3 did really well in Japan.
I would be surprised if it is a concern to some Japanese homes. I mean, space is, you know, the old space is a premium joke, but I mean, to an extent, I'm sure it is a consideration.
It wouldn't be the number one reason you would shoot that you would use to choose your system.
No, of course not. But it may be a reason you say, I don't need a second console.
Yeah,
too much space.
It's just the thing. It just seems like something that only a Japanese person would consider a problem.
The fact that it's backwards compatible means you can already get rid of a system that you already have if you put this in your home.
True.
So it's already space efficient in that way.
Well, it's space efficient in two dimensions.
I mean, you know, they can make the box as small as they want, but they're going to fill up your home with all these damn controllers anyway. So
that's different. That's your decision. Like I said, Wii is only space efficient in two dimensions. In depth, it's got all kinds of issues. It's the longest fucking system in the world.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we explored several options. I'm sure we didn't cover everything.
Make your systems less long. That's how you fix third-party relationships. More plastic crap.
There's a lot of things they can do, but certainly I do reject the notion that third parties don't want to compete with Nintendo. You know, they don't want to be on Nintendo systems because Nintendo's games are too good and nobody. Now, I do think there is a perception that people don't buy third-party games, but that can be fixed. That is not an intrinsic issue. That is a culture issue. That can definitely be fixed.
Yeah, I think Johnny definitely touched on one of the big problems is that, you know, these companies, they don't want to spin up a one-off team just to make something for a Nintendo console that has really, really low sales.
They barely even did it on Wii, and Wii had a humongous install base, you know, and it had much better third-party game sales than Wii U does. And even then, you had a lot of companies saying, you know, yes, we started a studio to make Wii games, but then they made two of them and then we moved them on to do other things because we didn't really think it was worthwhile. And you don't want a studio to have to create a new business unit just to make games for your system.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's already starting at a huge disadvantage, you know, and that is definitely not making development on your system cheaper if other companies have to basically like reinvent their business model to even support your platform. That's not healthy. So they've got to have more commonality with these other systems. And I think it's a balancing act, but I feel like there's a way to do that without being a carbon copy of what the other guys are doing and without your system being completely indistinguishable. But that's the challenge. It'll be interesting to see how they pull that off. I mean, to me, in my mind, Nintendo's platforms will always be unique from the other guys because they will have Nintendo games. And if the hardware is different, I don't really care. That's not really a big benefit for me, you know. So with Wii U, it seemed like at a time, it seemed like it would have the most commonality ever with the other systems. But then it took so long for them to release it that by the time it got out there, most of the developers were already moved on to, you know, Xbox One and PS4. So I don't think it did them any good. All right, well, let's move on. And John Lindemann is reading the next email.
All right. Nick writes, I was wondering, what would you do if you were put in charge of Nintendo, with the keys to the company and complete control, what would you do differently or change about the company and its products?
We had some funny responses over the email thread.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
my answer was hire Shigesato Itoi so I can announce some other game and then fire him and cancel it and laugh.
And what I said was hire Iwata to sit down and play his own terrible games.
No, it started with his own with terrible games, to which I responded, you mean his own?
Yes.
Which he's like done that. He did it for Game Center CX. He played Balloon Fight. And
that's awesome.
Commented something along the lines of, I don't remember it being this hard.
Yeah, for Iwata worked on a lot of really good games too, though. I think he was involved with Kirby's Adventure.
He was involved in. He was also involved in stuff like Lolo. I mean,
yeah, Lolo's good, really good.
Like a lot of the real early stuff before the merger with, or before the acquisition by Nintendo.
Right. Probably some of those early Game Boy games, like I think HAL made Gator's Revenge Pinball.
Yeah, they did.
Some stuff like that.
For a more serious, let's not make Mother fans cry, although that would be really fun answer. I'm gonna go with. I would put way more resources into the divisions that have been delivering things outside my normal wheelhouse. So I'm basically giving Monolith whatever the fuck they want. do they want like those Coca-Cola freestyle machines at every desk? Fine, have them. Knock stuff out. I'll fly in whatever flavor packet you want from North America. Just get the next game out. I don't care.
But in all seriousness, James, Are you suggesting that you'd like those teams to be able to make more than one game at the same time?
I would like them to be able to either be able to make more than one game at the same time or continue to feel free to make what they're making that the rest of my company is not.
I agree.
Because they are essentially filling a niche that is in desperate need of being filled. I mean, Monolith Soft, all the way back to GameCube, has been providing Nintendo with their RPGs. Keep in mind that Baten Kaito's Origins is a Nintendo published thing, even though it was technically released before they bought Monolith. Namco Bandai, I think it was post merger. I think it was Namco Bandai at that point, wasn't going to fund the sequel, and Nintendo came in and said, "All right, well, we'll just have to fund it then because we need some damn RPGs on this system."
Yeah.
And there are some other divisions that are doing similar things. There are some second-party relationships that I might try to lock down as more permanent than they currently exist because those companies are producing things that are not what we're good at making. It's about securing the breadth and depth of your platform versus, you know, just producing games.
At one time, Monster Games was making really good racing games for Wii.
They were kind of.
It did Excite Truck and.
They were making Excite really.
Bots and,
they were making really dumb but amusing racing games. Yeah,
they made the first Pilot Wings in 15 years.
They did.
We don't know what those guys are working on now. I think they were. Oh, they made the Donkey Kong Country port to 3DS.
They did. They made a lot of they make some really stupid games, but enjoyably stupid. I mean, Excite Truck is if you've not played Excite Truck in a long time,
gloriously hilarious.
That game is dumb as hell, but amusing.
It's also incredibly fun.
That's a great game.
I want to play it now.
It's one of my favorite Wii games.
If I were in charge of Nintendo and I wasn't, you know, looking to maximize profits, or you know, if it wasn't a problem to be. You know, if I wasn't afraid to run the company in the ground or anything like that, strictly as a fan, I would have maybe all the programmers and game designers play another system than Nintendo systems. Ooh. You know, like try to see what's around a little bit, because, you know, like there was that report where they were saying, can you explain to us, you know, like PSN or XBLA? We've never used it, you know. When they were designing the eShop. So that could be helpful. You know, I like that Nintendo does the things they do in a unique way, but sometimes you'd also want them to include the basic stuff that
Well, then don't let them play the PS3, because that's just going to give them terrible ideas.
Yeah, sure. Skip to the PS4.
Don't look at that! Don't look at it! It's terrible!
You can have your own individual identity, even being aware of what other people are doing. And yeah. If you're not aware of what other people are doing, you're probably going to end up making the same mistakes that they did, but years later. That's exactly what we've seen with Nintendo lately.
And beyond that, like also if they see what Sony is doing, maybe they'll see, you know, the whole cross-buy thing and having these, you know, the virtual console, just how much maybe players would benefit, and maybe the sales would benefit too from having cross-buy purchases of one game on both the 3DS and the Wii U, you know. And I would fast track the virtual console. I don't know what's making the process so long to emulate these titles, but they gotta do it faster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why not? Like, let people choose which version of the ROM they're buying. Or give them all, you know, like the European, the American.
Everybody gets the European version.
No. No one will want to pick that version.
Final Destination.
But, like, if we could, like, if I could, I would just, you know, like, oh, give me the Japanese version of Ninja Gaiden 3. I want to be able to finish this at some point. You know, that would be amazing. And yeah, all the Europeans would just buy the North American versions of every game.
How only?
It would be fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say open the floodgates on Virtual Console because obviously, you know, they're probably going as fast as they can given the current resources, which tells me they probably need a lot more people on the job for that.
Yeah.
But
yep.
To me, I mean, again, I'm conjecturing here, but my guess is that the amount of work needed per title compared to the amount of money that you could make if you could release almost anything, mm-hmm. just put that stuff out because I feel like people would just go on a feeding frenzy and you don't have to produce any physical goods to sell those games. So you can sell a lot of games to people really quickly. And they're very high profit margins. So, and you would make your fans really happy. So I think that's the way to go. And then long-term prospects, you guys might think I'm crazy, but I say Nintendo should buy the Xbox division from Microsoft.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, if they were willing to sell
Here's the thing though.
You know? Microsoft is very willing to sell it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you hear conflicting things. You hear, you know, this person wants to spin it off, whatever.
The thing about Microsoft is that it has a lot of institutional investors that want them to spin off everything.
Yeah, and also the future for them is not necessarily – it's not really in Windows or it's not in their enterprise stuff. I mean, really, they want to be a devices and services company, and that would fly completely in the face of getting rid of the Xbox.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Investors are terrible at making long-term decisions. I mean,
yeah, they always want that.
The reason you should never listen to anything Michael Pachter ever has to say ever is that his entire objective is to make money in the very short term, make a lot of money quickly. Basically, his opinion on how to quote save a company is completely invalid and should be ignored at all costs.
Well, I mean, he's an analyst mostly for investors,
right? And
for
the investors
want
to make a lot of money right now and don't really care about down the road.
If you're interested in flipping a stock tomorrow, then his advice is probably very sound.
The fact that any gaming outlet would ever ask his opinion is incredibly moronic.
Yeah,
he's just because he's a known name. Yeah. That's all. You know, because he gets quoted in these NPD articles.
But the thing is, it's the same philosophy going on there. Like, you need to spin off your home operating system division. Why?
Yeah.
They still make money on that thing.
Yeah.
Well, they don't make money on Xbox. I don't think they ever have.
It's profitable now.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of it's bouncing around that just above zero arc area.
I just think it would be a nice way for Nintendo to expand their technology base and their user base and, you know, sort of combine software libraries. I mean, it wouldn't do Wii U any good, but like I said, it'd be a long-term strategy. Anyway, just wanted to go left field.
My two are basically, I would get a company, somebody, to just fix their online shit and make everything the same across the board and allow you to buy a game on one device and use it on another device. And
a company like GameSpy?
No.
Whoever.
No.
Whoever it takes.
No.
Whatever it takes.
No.
That's number one. Number two, I would do whatever it takes to make Time Splitters 4 happen.
Whoa.
Really?
Yes.
It's a very personal pick, John. You'd have
to, that's the thing. Though,
you might have to dig some of the developers out of the grave.
Well, that's the thing. It's owned by Crytek, and they've apparently buried it, but Nintendo has fat pockets.
Well, because they couldn't figure out how to make a cry pun out of the name, so they just told the fuck off.
Exactly.
And done with it.
Cry splitters.
But that's the thing. I mean, I feel like that's the first person shooter series that really, really is at home on Nintendo platforms. I think
it was very cartoony.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it would really be a good fit to be Nintendo's first person shooter flagship.
All right, I feel like I could challenge you on that, but we don't have time. So I would love to play it. I don't know that it would be a great business move, but we got to wrap up the show, guys. The email address to send in your questions is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And before we go, I did want to let people know there is a new episode of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, one of my favorite podcasts, and I always really enjoy it. But this, I think, was one of the best episodes in a long time. TYP is joined by first-time co-host Josh Max, who you might have heard spouting Pokemon crazy talk over on Connectivity. He's a very funny guy. And I noted, I was listening to it earlier today, and I noted that it seems like a lot of the games they chose for this episode are games I would associate with our own James Jones. And in fact, they talk about that at certain points. And at one point, TYP even does an impression of James.
Oh, God.
You really want to hear that.
Oh, I'm not sure I want
to
hear that.
So go check it out. Search for Radio Trivia on iTunes or look for it over at NintendoWorldReport.com. That's all for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Thank these guys for staying up late with me. And we'll get back to you next week on Radio Free Bravely Default.
Pretty much.
Yep. Later.